5 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show on this really pleasant Thursday afternoon here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The question from Kevin Ray, the voice of the Suns on Fox Sports Arizona, was pleasant enough to Chris Paul. Hey, you guys won. You have to be pleased. You have to be happy with how you guys responded and played after what happened in Memphis. And Chris Paul said, yeah, no, I'm really not happy with anything at all.
You know, we're supposed to win, but I still don't love the way we finish games. It just don't feel good.
did you watch it?
I did.
He was kind of pissed.
He was a little surly.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like if you said, you know, how would you? He was pissed. He was pissed off.
Yeah, he was. He was.
I mean, you could play this sound, but then if you saw his face, it was just like disgust. Like, he was disgusted. Yeah. We had a 15-point lead over this team, and we allowed them to cut it to two? What the hell are we doing?
You notice, he's kind of, like, looking around the arena. He's looking at – he's almost, like, looking at the scoreboard in disbelief. Like, he's looking up there like, man, how did we only win by that little, right? You know, I mean, he's mad. He's angry. He's pissed. He's there was visible disgust on his face, and it was great. God, I loved it. It was almost my favorite part of last night's game. DeAndre Ayton and what he did was clearly the favorite part, but that was almost my favorite part, is how unacceptable it was to Chris Paul that they won that game the way they did. That was freaking awesome, I thought.
Yeah, but listen, I'm glad he did it, right? It's a message to his teammates. And I'm sure he said the same thing to them, you know, when he got into the locker room afterwards. Yeah, you guys, you know, you can be happy with this win for a minute, but how did we blow a 15-point lead? Against this team, okay? They've lost 4 out of 5. They're no good. They're missing players. Like, they've traded their two best players this year. How does that happen? Like, that's what he's trying to instill in these guys. That's not acceptable. And I think a lot of the younger Suns players, they're just not accustomed to winning. Like, they're just not accustomed to winning. So for them, hey, a win's a win. We'll take it. Hey, we went on the road and won a game against the Rockets. We'll take that. Chris Paul's trying to say, yeah, but that's not really it. Like, you know, if you want to get to where I've been before, you can't just accept that game as, oh, it's a win. You've got to be upset that we didn't do the things that we needed to do to bury that team.
Yeah. Here's more Chris Paul. And again, the audio doesn't do it all the justice that needs to be done. That there's a visual component to this, too, that we obviously are limited by. We can't do it. But you should have seen the look on his face when he's talking about all of the empty possessions in the last 2 minutes of the game.
We just have a lot of empty possessions. You know what I mean? That's understood. You know, we got somewhat of a young team that's, you know, not necessarily used to winning games. You know, and you win games in this league down the stretch. So that's on me. Figure it out, because supposed to win this game, you know, and it's not even supposed to be that close.
I can't even tell if he's mad at himself. I mean, he said right there in that soundbite, man, that's on me. That's on me. He's
sure.
And I don't know if that's fair for him to do that. I don't think it's all him, but he clearly views himself as the guy who's not supposed to allow something like that to happen at the end of that game. That's on me. I've got to figure this out. I've got to figure out why we're not finishing these games the way we should. He's taking some personal responsibility with this.
I mean, good. Isn't that what you want? I mean, ultimately, isn't that what you want? You want him to be accountable? You want him to be a leader? I mean, he's getting paid a lot of money, man, at his age, to win basketball games, but to lead. You know, You know, Chris Paul, they're not going to win a championship with Chris Paul in these 2 years. Okay, they're not. I'll tell you right now, they're not going to win a championship in the 2 years with Chris Paul. But when Chris Paul leaves, if he does leave after 2 years, you know, you want to, when they do win a championship, if they do, you want to look back on the lessons learned from Chris Paul, and you want those, he wants those guys to remember that. You know, hey, we learned a lot from Chris Paul when he was here. We learned how to win. We learned how to be a team. We learned how to win. We learned how to not accept losing and to not accept the way we play. And so there's just so many lessons to be learned from Chris Paul, and I think he understands that.
Yeah, there were 2 points in that game where I was absolutely convinced the Suns were going to blow out the Rockets. And point number one was after that early third quarter run. Suns were up by 20. It was like, I don't know, 75-54 or 74-54, something like that. And I thought, oh, okay, here, this is exactly what should have happened. This is an inferior team. The Suns are a superior team. They need to blow them out. Rockets go on a run, and that lead evaporates. Okay, but then Ayton plays the best four-minute stretch maybe of his entire career. We talked about that earlier where he's blocking shots and he's posting up and he's dunking and he's throwing down on guys. And they extend it back to 15. And at that moment, I thought, okay, good. Here it is. They're going to end up winning this game by 15 to 20 points, which is exactly how it should be. That was a two-point game with a minute and a half to go. It was so frustrating to watch. And I said this to you earlier. And Gambo, I do not have one single number to back this up. This is completely my perception of watching the Suns so far this season.
Okay.
It feels like at the end of these games, whether it was the Detroit game, whether it was the Memphis game, or whether it was this game against Houston, that they just haven't quite figured out the Booker, Paul, alpha male, who's running the show dynamic. And there just seems to be a lot of, I don't want to even call it confusion. It's just, it doesn't seem like they've quite figured out exactly who should be in charge of the ship the last 4 minutes of a game, especially when they're leading like they were against Detroit, when they were leading like they were against Memphis. The whole thing just gets mismanaged somehow, and I just don't know if those two alpha male leaders have quite figured out who is supposed to be the leader in those moments.
And I don't think they have to have it figured out by now. What if they play 13 games?
Yes, 13
games. I mean, I don't think that they have to have it figured out by now. I think over time, and I think on different times, you know, I don't think there's one guy, okay, here's our closer, he's the guy. Now, you know, it's going to be one of those two guys most likely. Who's having a good game, who's not? Who's got the ability to get to the free throw line, who doesn't? Like, who's got a better matchup to take advantage of? Like, all of that stuff will factor in. I mean, on certain days, in the last few minutes of a game, it could be Chris Paul that takes over. In certain minutes, and certain other times, it could be Devin Booker that takes over. So I don't think there's one guy that's going to take it over. I think it'll be both of those guys, depending on the circumstances. But, you know, right now, I don't disagree with anything you said. I think that they are having a hard time trying to figure that out. And last night was a great indication. If you looked at the end of that game, all the shots, Campaign missed a shot, McHale missed a shot, Paul missed a shot, Booker missed a shot. I mean, it was a lot of guys that were missing shots that allowed them to come back. You know, some of it was with DeAndre Ayton out of the game. They made this unbelievable comeback, and then DeAndre was able to, like, right the ship at the end, get some big rebounds, one defensive, one offensive. DeAndre hit two big free throws, and then Booker hit a big shot, and they were able to put that game away. But it shouldn't have been that hard. And I do think that you're onto something here, and I just think that it's probably going to take more games for them to figure that out.
Yeah, when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, after missing the playoffs this year, it was widely assumed that the Arizona Cardinals next year, they better make the postseason. Otherwise, there could be some changes over there. Well, one very prominent NFL writer at ESPN doesn't think the Arizona Cardinals are going to make the playoffs next year. We'll tell you who he does think will make it next on the Burns and Gambo show. John Gambadero, Dave Burns, Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM.
Ah,
no Olympics.
No Olympics.
You know, I'll say this about the Olympics, and I say this every 4 years about the Olympics, all right?
Yeah.
I really do, how much work it takes to compete in the Olympics and all the training and all the sacrifices, all of that stuff. I'm not a huge Olympic sport fan, but I will tell you, sure as you know what, that every 4 years when those Olympics come around, I love watching them. I love watching the Olympics.
Some events.
I enjoy the storytelling. I enjoy the events. I love the and everybody in my family does. I've noticed that that is a really good way for us as a family to gather around the television because it's something we all want to watch. It's something we can all get something out of. For that reason, I've always loved the Olympics because it just seems like no matter what we have going on in our lives, we'll gather around that TV set for a few hours every single night for two straight weeks and watch it because it offers a little something for everybody. I think that's great.
Yeah. And now this, I'm just, you know, looking at these stories. I mean, you know, Japan concluded that the Olympics will have to be canceled and will try to secure the games for the next available year in 2032.
Yeah,
so like you're not going to push it anymore. Like you're not going to like because you've already lost 2 years.
Yeah, that's the next. I mean, that's the next time Japan can host those Olympics.
Right,
it'd be 2032.
The next available. Yep.
the next Summer Olympics.
So what does that mean? Do you have the Summer Olympics? Okay, so they've missed 2 years. Do they just miss a whole period and come back and do it again in 2024?
Yep, I would assume that's exactly what you do.
Because think about it. Think about it. You didn't have it in 2020. You're not going to have it in 2021. Do you have it in 2022 and then come back again and have it in 2024, well, like within 2 years?
Yeah, the way they're staggered now is you do, you know, every 2 years there's an Olympics, whether it's winter or summer. So the Winter Olympics now are scheduled for 2022, as they always have been. And then you would have the Summer Olympics in 2024. You would just skip the 2020 Summer Games, and the next available window for Tokyo to host would be 2032. So, yeah, you would basically, you will have gone 8 years between Summer Olympics if that happens. The last Summer Olympics would have been 2016. The next Summer Olympics would be 2024, and you would just skip the 2020 games, which would suck for a whole bunch of athletes whose window to compete in those Olympics will close because of that. Yeah, it's
Los
too
Angeles
bad.
Has it in 2028. That's the last one that's posted. Los Angeles 2028.
Yeah.
So I don't know that they would. I don't know. Would they have the Olympics in 2022, 2024, and then 2028? Would they do that?
I don't know if you could have the bandwidth to do winter and summer games in the same year.
Yeah.
Because the Beijing games are at the start of 22. I don't know how you could have a summer games that same year.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see what they do. Do they just literally just skip a whole cycle?
That's what I would guess.
Of 4 years?
That's what I would guess, too. Because I
so then we'll be 8 years between Olympics?
Yeah, I don't think you could do... I think Sarah's right. I don't think you could do a summer and winter Olympics in the same year. I think there's just too much. It's just too much work, too much money, too much time, too much everything. So yeah, I think that's what. And of course, Japan's not acknowledging this. There's just this report in this London-based media outlet, The Times, that privately Japan is their government is conceding it's not going to happen. We can't do it. It's just not going to be global travel. Vaccinations, you know, safety, all that stuff. They're just not going to be ready to host it. So yeah, Gambo, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think we will go 8 years between Summer Olympics, while the winter schedule remains completely on its path. 2022 Winter Olympics, and then the next Summer Olympics will be 2024. I'm guessing that's what's going to happen. Yeah, I'm guessing that's what's going to happen.
Man, yeah,
yeah.
Keep your eye on that. We'll see. But yeah, it does look like the Olympics are going to be postponed again or canceled, and then we'll see how that affects the NBA and the NHL with their scheduling. Remember, the NBA did not release their schedule for the second half of the season. This would be a big factor in it. And if there's no Olympics, well, then there's no rush to get all those games in a certain amount of time.
Right. In fact, the NBA actually did something while we've been on the air the last 20 minutes or so.
Well, postponed more games because of COVID-19?
No. You know what they did? They changed the tip times for about 20 games. From January 23rd through 31st, they pushed them back by about an hour. And the reason why is to give themselves more time to complete same-day COVID tests for every game that day. So like a bunch of games, including a Suns game, I believe, against the Warriors,
yes,
got pushed back an hour. Went from a 7 p.m. start time to an 8 p.m. start time. And part of the reason why is they want that extra hour to make sure with their rapid tests, the PCR tests, that they're good, that they're clean, and that they have those test results in time for the start of the game. So no more postponements, but, you know, pushing back start times by an hour, they did that to a bunch of games coming up next week. A bunch of games.
If that's what it takes, that's what it takes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly. All right, real quick. Bill Barnwell, probably the lead or one of the lead NFL writers at ESPN.com, predicting the 2021 NFL playoff bracket. He predicted AFC, he predicted NFC, and even he acknowledges in the story, and he's one of their best NFL writers. Look, I get how ridiculous this is. There's so many things that can happen between now and then, but he's just kind of basing it off of the opponents and what he presumes the rosters will be. He does not have the Arizona Cardinals as a playoff team in the NFC next year. He does not even have the Cardinals as one of the three teams left out of the playoffs next year. He doesn't even mention the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, it's nothing to get concerned about now, but that is for a team that we locally think kind of has to make the playoffs next year. Otherwise, there might be a bunch of changes over there. It is interesting to think that they're not even listed on Barnwell's story as making the playoffs next year.
All right. Now a couple of things here, right? I mean, these are really difficult to project now. Extremely difficult to project this. It's January 21st. I mean, there's still three more football games to be played. I don't know who the Cardinals are going to get in the draft. I don't know who they're going to get in free agency. I don't know who they're going to trade for. I have no idea what that roster is going to look like now. I don't know who their starting running back is. I don't know who their number two wide receiver is. I don't know who their pass rushers are. I don't know if Patrick Peterson's coming back, or who the, I don't know who two cornerback. Like, very difficult to make those predictions right now. That everybody does it because everybody wants more NFL, but extremely difficult to look at that and put any real credibility into it. You know what I'm saying?
Of course, yes, of course it is, and that's why I'm not gonna. It's nothing to get freaked out about. Oh, Bill Barnwell thinks they're not making the playoffs. Okay, so Bill Barnwell thinks they're not making the playoffs. Doesn't change my expectations for this team next year. They have to make the playoffs. You know, I believe that if they don't, barring some really unusual, you know, catastrophic circumstances, somebody gets hurt and misses the entire year, I believe that if they don't make the playoffs next year, there's going to be widespread changes within the Cardinals organization. If they,
I agree.
Go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be. I mean, I think, you know, after 3 years, do you give everybody a fourth year? I mean, you definitely give everybody a second year. You give everybody a third year. You know, I think a lot of it depends. I mean, you know, because anything outside of the playoffs is going to be a disappointment, and you're going to feel like you took a step back. Now, if you go 9-7 and you don't make the playoffs, you know, you get beat out. I mean, okay, there's a scenario where I might be okay with bringing everybody back, show progress, win a bunch of games, you win 9 football games, and you miss out on the playoffs. Okay, I might be able to live with that. But if you go backwards, you go 6-10 and the offense isn't working and clicking, and Cliff is still making the mistakes that he makes with clock management and play calling, and you know, there's no discipline, and they lead the league in penalties. I mean, they know what they got to address. Like, everybody knows what they have to address to get better next year. So if they can't address those things, then you got issues.
Speaking of changes, today the Lions introduced Dan Campbell as their new head coach.
Yeah, best 90-minute press conference for a coach ever.
This introductory press conference was amazing in how just blunt the whole thing was. Here's a rather long cut from Dan Campbell today as he was introduced as the head coach of the Lions.
This place has been kicked, it's been battered, it's been bruised, and I can sit up here and give you coach speak all day long. I can give you, you know, hey, we're going to win this many games. I can't, but none of that matters, and you guys don't want to hear it anyway. You've had enough of that, so excuse my language. All right, here's what I do know, is that this team is going to take on the identity of this city, all right, and this city's been down, and it found a way to get up, all right? It's found a way to overcome adversity, all right? And so this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up, and then it's going to take 2 more shots to knock us down, all right? And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up, and then it's going to take 3 shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right? That's going to be the mentality.
Outstanding.
Guys are going to want to run through a wall for him. That was an epic press conference. One of the greatest press conferences ever, 90 minutes long, passionate, connected, energy, lots of memorable moments from that 90-minute news conference with him. I mean, he was – yeah, and he played for the Lions. He played for them for a few years. So he's got, you know, he's got some skin in the game from being a former Lions player.
I don't have the audio to this one. I've just got the text, but here's another line from him today. Quote, "When you come in here, you're going to get beat up. I'm talking about the team, not the city. Tourists are welcome." Close quote.
Did you guys see what the Lions tweeted out a picture of his office and the nameplate? Did you guys see what it said? It says Dan Campbell, head coach /the dude.
That's
you're going to leave
beat up. That is great.
Not tourists. Tourists are welcome. We're not going to beat you up. We're just talking about the visiting team. We're going to beat you up.
There was a bunch of, you know, great, you know, zings that he had in that press conference. So he said, "I think we need to bring some hope back into this place, man. listen, I'm willing to do whatever, man. I'm not kidding you. I'm a big mind over matter person. And a lot of you are going to think I'm a kook a little bit here. But I do believe you can will things to happen in some regard. Like if you're a really positive thinker, I believe that positive things can happen to you. And those around begin to grow from that. They feel your energy. So he's really, you know, really trying to, you know, resonate with the fan base and the players, yeah, too, just to get the players to want to, you know, run through a wall for him.
If you're in Detroit, tip back a white Russian today in honor of Dan Campbell, the head coach of the Detroit Lions. When we come back, DeAndre Ayton continued that mean, aggressive streak he showed off the other day in Memphis. And now the question that we have to ask, is this now who he is? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
I'm the dude, man.
It was a moment that we were waiting for, we were hoping to see, and we saw it. And now that it's happened, Chris Paul and others would like to see it again.
Just trying to stay on him, explain to him how easy this game is. You know, at times, especially when you're playing with, you know, good players, unselfish players, a guy like Book, all the guys that we got on our team, you know, we stay on him because we know what he's capable of. But the best players in this league, they do it night after night, you know, not just once every few games. So we're going to keep pushing him. He got it. He just got to, you know, do it.
He's talking about DeAndre Ayton, Gambo. He got it. He just got to, you know, do it.
He's just got to do it. You don't want to, I like where you were headed with this earlier, right? You don't want to overpraise. Look, this is what we expect out of you. And it's got to get to the point where it's not like, oh my God, look at DeAndre. He was so great. Yo, DeAndre, you were so, no, like that's it, like that. It has to become expected. And it can't be, I'm going to praise him every time he has a great game because, you know, again, like you need to come to expect that out of him. If Devin Booker goes for 30 points, 8 rebounds and 8 assists. Do we say, oh my God, Devin Booker, you were so great. No, you come to expect that. So I think any of the great players, I mean, if Nikola Jokic has a great game in Denver, they don't like lose their mind over it. Right now, yes, people are losing their mind over DeAndre Ayton's game last night. The Aytonator or the all the words that are being said. Like, I get it. He hasn't had games like that so far this year, so you're overly excited. But you do want to get to the point where he has a game like that and say, oh, okay, DA had another really good game.
Yeah, and it becomes, oh, now, when he gets there, how he gets there, I don't know. How long he stays there, I don't know. I just know for these last two games, it's been there and it has been spectacular. 26 points last night, 17 rebounds, 5 blocks. He's the first Suns player with a stat line like that since Sean Marion back in 2007. There were some on social media last night. You and I would agree that 4-minute stretch of him in the fourth quarter was the best 4-minute stretch of DeAndre Ayton's career. Blocking shots, dunking, moving himself into post position, using his body, being physical, you know, hitting long jump shots that, you know, it could have been a 3 if his toe was just, you know, 2 inches back a little further. It was one of the best stretches we've ever seen out of him, and yet the reaction after the game was, "We want to see more. Or keep doing it." Here's Devin Booker.
I want to see more. I want to see more, and that's what I told him. You know, I mean, there's probably quotes from, you know, early on in his rookie season where, you know, I told him 16-10 is cool. Like, it's cool, but I see 30-20 out of you. I think he's turned that page, like I said. And I don't want to keep, you know, talking him up, but he has to keep playing, and he understands that. And that goes for our whole team. You know, we have to stay locked in. It's a long season. You know, there's going to be highs, there's going to be lows, but, you know, keeping that same mentality and approach, you know, the same. Each time you go out there is what's consistent.
I want to keep talking him up, but I want to be careful about how I talk him up because I don't want him to think that he's arrived,
right,
or that he's accomplished anything. You know, I want to keep talking him up, but I don't want his head to get all big either. Like, oh, he's there, and he doesn't have to stop working at it Because it does. He has to keep working at it. But, my God, if that's who DeAndre Ayton's going to be, okay, now we can really start dreaming big about this Suns organization. Now
well,
we can
Supermax
really start
guy,
thinking
right?
about it.
That's the Supermax DeAndre Ayton. Okay, that's the I'm going to get a Rudy Gobert type of contract if you're consistently playing like that. I mean, that's – I said it yesterday. He's getting $50 million no matter what just because he's 7 foot tall and he's 250 pounds. Somebody's handing him $50 million when he hits free agency no matter what. Now it's up to him to make it either 100 or 150 or 200. It's up to him. $50 million's a given. You already have it. Now it's do you get 100, do you get 150, do you get 200? Your play will ultimately determine how much you're going to get. But I think Booker's learning from Paul. I mean, don't get too excited, don't get too high, don't get too low, and don't make him think that, you know, hey, you know, that's so great, DeAndre. No, that's expected. That's expected out of you. That's what we expect. You're capable of doing that, then do it. Then do it. And you're not going to get praised for it every time you do it. You know, we're not going to lose our mind every time you go out there and you have a game like that because you were the number one overall pick in the draft and we expect that out of you.
Yeah, and look, I don't expect I have high expectations for DeAndre Ayton. I think we all do. I don't expect he's going to play like that every single night, but more often than not. I mean, what is it you like to say that the mark of a true great in this league is that they'll have maybe 5 off games a year, 10 off games a year, and then that's about it, right? And then after that, it's your ability to play like that 70 out of 82 games or 67 out of 82 games is what truly is the mark of a great player in this league. And I certainly think DeAndre Ayton is capable of playing like he played last night, maybe not as gaudy in numbers, but certainly that style of aggression that he played last night. There's no reason he can't play like that every single night in this league because he is a mismatch nightmare for so many teams in this league with what he brings, and he just needs to understand that he's got it. He just needs to, as Chris Paul says, you just got to do it. You got it. Yeah. It's there. You just got to do it.
You know, once you punch yourself out of that paper bag and you figure out, okay, I'm capable of doing this. Okay, now there's no stop. No, there will be games when he struggles. I mean, obviously, he still is very dependent on Chris Paul throwing him that alley-oop, and Mikal Bridges throwing him that alley-oop, and positioning and everything. I mean, it's just like – so it's not like
– But you know what? But that's what I liked about that play with Cousins, because he created that whole thing himself.
On his own.
You know which play I'm talking about? Or the one
sure,
where
he backed him down. He backed him down, and he turned around, and he hit the jump shot. And I've got you know, my notes, I think that gave them at that point, that basket gave them a 91-84 lead. It was a turnaround jumper over Cousins.
Yep. Yeah, but he started at the top of the circle, dribble, worked his way down low, turned his back, and just started muscling DeAndre Ayton started muscling DeMarcus Cousins with his physique, with his body, and eventually there was nothing Cousins could do about it. He just backed him down, turn around, little jump shot there. He wasn't dependent on Chris Paul. Now, a lot of his dunks, yeah, it was the Paul lob or it was the Bridges drive and there's Ayton by himself. Sure, he was dependent on that. But his ability to create that space for himself, that physicality on his own without anybody's help, man, that is the step I was looking for him to take. That play was a thing of beauty last night watching it happen because that's the DeAndre Ayton that is going to be very difficult to stop in this league if he can keep playing like that.
Yeah, and it wasn't like it was just like one play. It was a stretch of plays, play after play after play, and it was on both ends of the court. It was offensive rebounds. It was defensive rebounds. It was block. He had two block shots back-to-back, blocked Cousins and blocked Gordon back-to-back in the fourth quarter. So it was the block shots. It was the defensive rebounds. It was the offensive rebounds. It was the turnaround jumper. It was the one-handed dunks. It was like, okay, like you said, is everything in your toolbox you used? You used everything in your toolbox. Yep. We got a chance to see you. I mean, you are a true handyman out there. I mean, you used everything. You could fix anything.
Yep. As Chris Paul said, he got it. He just got to, you know, do it. And that is the truest thing that could be said about DeAndre Ayton and what he did last night. Next game for the Suns tomorrow night. Against the Denver Nuggets, another nationally televised game for the Phoenix Suns. Now, when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the other big story of the last news cycle or two, Larry Scott out as the Pac-12 commissioner, and two of the names in particular have Arizona ties when it comes to Scott's replacement. We'll tell you who they are coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. Well, Larry Scott, in a move that is long overdue, no longer the commissioner of the Pac-12 Conference.
Well,
and there's a variety of reasons. Well, yeah, till June. Right, he's on the job till June. But it is time for this conference, long overdue for this conference, to move in a better direction. A better direction with their commitment to football because of what football can fund for everything else in the conference. Better direction when it comes to their media rights and their Pac-12 network and getting better exposure for their programs. And just overdue for, frankly, not being ignored on the college football scene. And that's maybe the most egregious thing of them all the last couple of years, where the Pac-12 just became so
irrelevant.
Damn, yeah, forgettable.
Irrelevant.
Just, yeah, easy to ignore. I just, because,
look,
there's a real fear, Gambo, a real fear, at least for me, that we're going to wake up a couple years from now, and if this thing doesn't get righted, that the Pac-12 is going to get left behind. That the schools that make up the ACC and the Big 12 and the SEC and the Big 10, they're just going to leave the Pac-12 behind because the Pac-12 needs them a whole lot than they need the Pac-12. And whoever the new commissioner is has to make sure this conference remains relevant and memorable. And that has not happened the last couple
What's
of years.
What's the last great sports moment you remember from the conference? And we've had to deal with Larry Scott's bonuses, that he took the bonus and he furloughed everybody. We had to deal with his ridiculous suite in Las Vegas, $7,500 a night during the basketball tournament a couple of years ago. We had the officiating scandal that you talked about earlier with Woody Dixon calling up and reversing the, you know, overruling a targeting call. I mean, but what sport moment do we have?
Boy. Is it wrong if I say a championship with Pete Carroll and USC?
That I mean, that's the
like
last
the right
one?
That's probably the right. I mean, I don't remember a specific moment with Chip Kelly and Marcus Mariota, but I do remember how very relevant those teams were, right? I mean, what Chip Kelly was doing.
Time.
I know.
That's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago. I know. That's the sad thing about this is it's been so long since any of that happened. That, yeah, I mean, that's it. The most recent thing would be Chip Kelly and Marcus Mariota. That's the last time I felt like the Pac-12 was truly, it had a brand to be reckoned with on the net. And I know Washington went to the college football playoff final four a few years ago. That brand, that moment didn't stand out in time. They lost and that was it and it was over and they haven't been back since. I'm going back to Chip Kelly and Marcus Mariota. I think that was the last time the Pac-12 had a brand that was memorable, that wasn't, to your point, irrelevant.
Relevant.
Those teams, those Oregon teams were very relevant. That was the last time.
Yeah. And that's the sad part. Like, you know, like everything in the conference has been about coaches and, you know, scandals, but it hasn't been about the product on the field. Now, they're putting guys in the NBA and they're putting guys in the NFL, like that stuff's happening.
Oh, sure.
and there's good games here and there, but I mean, what is the signature sports moment for the Pac-12 under Larry Scott? Well, I mean, what is it? And I'm just talking football, basketball, because honestly, I don't know anything about any of the other sports. I have no idea. But in the two major revenue generating sports, what is the signature moment that he was here?
Yeah, it's that there haven't been any, and that's the reason why he's not the commissioner anymore, or he won't be as of June 30th. Now, the names to replace him, and there was a story this morning on The Athletic, and I've seen a lot of these names before, but they kind of broke it down into different categories. The obvious names, they listed three, and I would agree that these are the three obvious names based off of what I've read and what I've heard about this job. Gene Smith, the AD at Ohio State, who of course was once the athletic director at Arizona State. Greg Byrne, the AD at Alabama, who of course was once the AD at the University of Arizona. And Oliver Luck, who is the father of Andrew, ran the XFL. He was an AD at West Virginia and is considered a real power broker when it comes to athletic departments and just his ability to kind of run an organization. Those are the three obvious names. And, of course, you and I are both struck by the local ties with Gene Smith and Greg Byrne. I know you and I both know Gene Smith a little more than Byrne because of our proximity to ASU versus U of A. But Greg Byrne's the AD of Alabama, man. That's, you talk about power brokers in the sport, that's a very powerful position and one that gives you a lot of experience if you're Greg Byrne.
Yeah, and I'd have to do a lot more research on him. Maybe he's a great candidate. I don't know. Gene Smith, I used to do a show with him. He used to come on with me every week and do a show. So I know him very well. I think he would be, a real solid candidate. He's been an outstanding athletic director for a long time.
Yeah, he's the other names to watch, also having local ties. In particular, Ray Anderson. He is mentioned as one of the four names to watch in this. Of course, the ASU AD, but as is pointed out in the story, his handling of a donor's alleged actions towards men's basketball coach Bobby Hurley's wife might come under scrutiny. The AD of Clemson is mentioned. The executive vice president of programming and scheduling for ESPN, Burke Magnus, is mentioned, calling him maybe the most influential person in college athletics who technically doesn't work in college athletics. And then Gloria Navarez, the West Coast Conference commissioner who spent 9 years in the Pac-12 office as the senior associate commissioner, is somebody who's also prominently mentioned and might have a real shot at the gig. And all of those names were connected with the ACC opening when that job came open a few months ago, Gambo.
They got to determine what's the most important thing to them. They've got a huge TV contract coming up, negotiations, within about a year they'll be negotiating the next TV rights. That's got to be on the forefront. And also just, making football more prominent. I mean, finding a way to get these football programs to be more prominent. They've got time, right? They don't have to make a hire today, tomorrow, next week. Larry Scott's going to hang on for a few more months, so they just have to get it right. They have to get it right because there's so many things down the road that you just don't know, so many obstacles. Can you expand further, and can you prevent teams from leaving? I mean, USC last year mentioned that everything's on the table. You've got to make sure you appease the teams that you have, the programs you have, and they need more revenue to do that.
Real quick, the Coors Light, what's on tonight? ESU versus U of A, that game starts at 7. We're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow at straight up 2 o'clock. Right here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.